I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This week, I'm back in Baltimore, and I want to talk about a number of different topics that have just been running through my head. So, it's time for another Bay's World episode. So like I said, the hubby and I just got back a couple of days ago from New Orleans. Had a wonderful time, a wonderful Thanksgiving, wonderful Bayou Classic, wonderful time with the fam, and a bonus due to a snafu with our flights. We now have an awesome trip that we can take next year. I don't know, we'll probably do something for the anniversary or our anniversary, something like that. But it wasn't anything big. It was just a snafu that was annoying and came at the worst time ever. But, you know, the airline hooked us up, so we're good. Anyway, so the classic itself was awesome. Where we stayed was awesome. It was more like it wasn't a traditional hotel. It was like a property that offered many apartments, basically not many apartments. These were apartments, full-size apartments. Didn't necessarily have a full-size kitchen. Our apartment didn't, but you know, it had all the beds we needed and the space was great and the location was cool because it's like we were at a good distance, within walking distance from the Superdome, and you know, you able-bodied and you're all right. You can walk to the quarter, Jackson Square and Cafe Du Monde and all that, or you could lift, but you know, we tried to walk. It was just an awesome experience. And for us, I think the most awesome part of it was, you know, the day of the classic, Juvenile performed, kind of like the pregame show, and it was something special about, first off, seeing Juvenile play in his city to fans who adored him and who grew up on him, and old heads and in between heads and the young babies just out there just vibing to his music. So that was one thing. But then the other thing for me was to see a healthy Juvenile having fun, looking good. Like I said, looking healthy, looked like he stopped drinking, or, you know, looked like he'd been taking care of himself. So look good. You like to see that. Sidebar, did you know Manny Fresh was a DJ? Because I didn't. And maybe I'm a fool for thinking that. Like, maybe I should have been paying attention. But I never knew he was a DJ. Anyhow, so he was there. And it was fun. It was pretty great. Anyhow, so that was NO. And it was great. And so we traveled on Tuesday. And we were there the whole, you know, the rest of the week and then through the weekend. And so apparently on travel day Tuesday, Tekashi 6ix9ine gets arrested. Now, I only know how to pronounce his name because I listen to a bunch of different podcasts who talk about him and talk about how he's been trolling and seen some messed up videos where he's just saying some weird stuff and seeming like he's a tough guy, but kind of, you know, you ever heard somebody who basically look like they're giving out wolf tickets? You know what I mean? Talking about they about that life, but they don't really look like they about that life. You know what I mean? You know, wearing all the bike gear, but doesn't even, you know, wearing all the bike gear, has a bike, but has never driven one before, type of thing. Anyhow, so, you know, he's irksome, and I certainly don't listen to his music, nor do I like him. But when I saw those pictures of him being detained, I was like, this looked like a little scared little boy. You know what I mean? And then I saw the clip. Now I'm looking at all of this on the travel back. I'm seeing all of this and I'm talking to the hubby about it. And he don't know who Tekashi 6ix9ine is either. Anyhow, you know, and we just get into a conversation about, you know, people who want to be associated with, you know, hard, real people, but don't really think about the consequences of that association. And I think it could be that, you know, this is Tekashi's story. He got caught up in something that he thought he could handle, but didn't really think it through because he's young, or he really is trying to be about that action and he's actually not built for this because, you know, he's just not built for this. Anyhow, you know, so this just whole thing got me thinking about a bunch of different things. You know, episodes, when you do an episode, you try to have a cohesive theme for the most part. And I'm not the best at it. You know, I'm just doing this because it's something fun that I like to do. And I have a lot of things that are running through my head. But, you know, in preparing for this episode, it just occurred to me that I have so many different things that I want to talk about, but not necessarily have a whole episode about. And so one of those things is, you know, I definitely want to talk about crime in the music business. And not just about Tekashi 6ix9ine and that affiliation with his the gang that he's affiliated with, but like just the music business and artists and folks who are into crime and doing dastardly things and their association with the music business and music business love affair with bad guys, honestly. So I want to talk about that. Then I want to talk about the fact that, you know, Baltimore is going back and forth and, you know, just the turmoil we've been in trying to get someone in here to head up our police force. And now we think we have someone, or at least a recommendation came out, but it came out all funny. And so I want to talk about that real briefly. And then I want to slide right over to books. Because at the end of the day, I read a lot of books, listen to a lot of books on Audible. And I'm kind of excited about a few books. And I don't know if I've talked about recommendations. These recommendations before, but I want to slide a few recommendations your way too. So, yep, this is what that episode's about. It's a catch-all, but hang in there. So, I find myself occasionally listening to a person I call Problematic Joe Budden and his podcast. Most of the time he sounds bitter and like he's trying to be relatively PC, but he ends up sounding problematic anyway. So I think it was a little bit earlier this week, I tuned into his show just because I really wanted to digest as much info, and let's face it, hot takes from New York rappers and industry people in the New York area about the, you know, the Tekashi 6ix9ine situation. And, you know, that's Joe's show. He New York rapper himself. And then I think most of the people on the, most of the people that are a part of the show are industry people in some way in the New York area. And so, you know, that's one of the places I turned to on YouTube. And anyway, while talking about Tekashi, Joe mentioned that there had been many killers who were tied to the rap game, basically hinting that rap and crime are often inextricably linked. Now, he said he wanted to start a podcast, like a separate podcast show about it. And while I don't think that's a bad idea, I think we do need more black and brown folks talking about this subject, talking about things that include a lot of black and brown people. I maintain that a show like that already exists. It just doesn't look like that. And the show that I think kind of fills that void that he's talking about, but kind of does it in a broader way, is called Disgraceland. And it's a podcast dedicated to not only exposing the most outlandish stunts of some over-the-top and high, reckless rappers, but felonious and often murderous musicians as well. And everyone knows, you know, about the tragic ends of Tupac and Biggie, you know. That left eye burned down the house that she shared with her football player boyfriend after a fight. You know, that Elvis was a pillhead at the end of his life. Sinatra was mob affiliated. Rick James did a lot of drugs and committed a lot of crimes before and after, you know, his music career. Or before his music career and during his music career, I should say. You know, Sam Cooke was high and out of his mind when he was killed. And that Janis Joplin, you know, basically like drank herself to death. But did you know that at least two prominent country stars have killed their wives in a drunken rage? that a rapper high on PCP cannibalized his roommate, that several musicians accidentally ran over members of their own entourage. See, that's the type of thing that I want to hear about, you know, not to glorify these people's story, but like, I want to hear the real. I don't want to see that cookie cutter image that you try to put up. I don't want to see the Plies image where he's walking around like a thug, tough guy, then come to find out some real tough guys came to his set. You know that story, the real tough guys came to the set that he and Jamie Foxx were on, and Jamie, seeing what was about to happen, ran and talked to the tough guys while Plies goes and runs in the bathroom. You know what I mean? Like, I want to hear about that stuff. You real people. And I don't wish you any harm, but I do want to hear real things about you. And then, you know, just taking a step back and looking at, you know, like I said, Sinatra was mob affiliated. And there's a story that goes that, you know, part of the reason why he was affiliated was because he wanted this, he had the sense of belonging, or that he wanted to belong to something. And those guys treated him, you know, they looked at to him like stars, and he ate that up because he looked to them like they were stars. So, you know, I kind of think, you know, you take these people with all of this raw talent, the industry people do, and you take this raw talent from some poor place. In Sinatra's case, he was from freaking Hoboken, New Jersey. Throw a bunch of money and personnel in the mix to polish them up and make them marketable, and then shove them back out into the world. And these folks are coming with the same baggage you found them with, and the money and fame only exacerbates the problem. It's like the oldest story in the book, right? But that's one side of the story. The other side of the story is how attractive the music business is to the criminal element. And just think about it. So basically, you know, and again, I'm not a crime expert, but you know I love watching History Channel, A&E, and all of that stuff. I grew up watching Law and Order like everybody else, or like many people. Watching a lot of documentaries and things like that. That's my thing. And, you know, I've watched just about every documentary on every type of mobster, American mobster, that you can think of. And, you know, that common through line is there is a point, just like the Godfather movie kind of suggests, there's a point where, you know, the folks want to add something to their portfolio to make them seem legitimate. You know what I mean? Put some shine on the reputation. And so, you know, you get these attention starved, and I'm not being kind, so just roll with me here on this theory, but you get these folks who have some sort of insecurity, and these I'm saying mobsters, but you know, the criminal element, these folks, you exploit them. You exploit that sense of, you know, their sense of belonging, wanting to belong, their craving for attachment and legitimacy in a weird way. And you exploit that to get what you want. Oh, so you have access to so-and-so. All right, cool. Well, yeah, come on, hang out with me. Mm-hmm. Because that's exactly what the mob did with Sinatra. Was it Frank Gianconi, who used Sinatra to try to get to the president, to try to get to Kennedy? And it was, you know, because Kennedy's brother was, I can't think of his brother, but he was attorney general at the time. And, you know, he was breathing down the mobster's necks. You know, and so I'm reminded in the Sinatra case, Sinatra's case kind of reminds me of Tekashi. You know, a mob is different. It's not different than a gang to me, as far as I'm concerned. They're both criminal elements who are organized in such a way to shake down the little man and to just take as much money as possible and not caring about the risk. That's how I see it. That might not be, you know, how you see it, but that's kind of how things shake out for me. And so, you know, I'm just looking and I'm like, you know, on one hand, maybe he's not a victim. Maybe he's just trying to play this, you know, like there's a school of thought that's out there saying he's a biggest troll ever. And this is just all fun and games. The ultimate troll activity, right? But then there's another school of thought, and I tend to believe this, that this is real, and he's way over his head. And these people are, the gang people that he were affiliated himself with are real. What is it, Treyway or something like that? They're real. And when I'm saying real, I mean that they are, have, or probably have or are committing crimes and know the risks, and they do it anyway. Tekashi ain't about that. And somebody said his real name, and if I knew his real name right now, I would say it, because Tekashi is an act. This is an actual person now who trying to act like the tough guy, but is, again, not about that life. And again, the criminal element is drawn to the music business as a way of, number one, access, and number two, legitimacy. In a lot of ways. Oh, let me hang around you. I'm not doing anything. What are you talking about? I've changed my ways. I've turned things around. Look, I'm hanging out with this person. Meanwhile, they're still doing every dastardly thing that they've ever been doing. But under the cover of this shiny new veneer, you know, this shiny new facade. So yeah, I think it's fascinating. I think Disgraceland does a good job of just exposing the truth behind all of these outlandish and outrageous music industry stars. But I think there is still some space to have something like a true crime show that exposes the underworld element that in its connection to hip-hop, but not just hip-hop, but the music industry itself. And I, for one, would read all the books and listen to all the podcasts, because I think it's so fascinating. So I started recording this podcast back in February of this year, though I only began recording on my current platform in May. And in the beginning, I spent more time highlighting things happening around Baltimore, good and bad. You know, highlighting local businesses and festivals, while also talking about our issues with crime and policing. And while I want this show to be about a range of topics that aren't specific to Baltimore, I do want to bring things back to where, you know, I'm at, and highlight those things that are still very much important to me and my family, you know, and my friends and things like that. And certainly in this time that we're in, you know, I'm reminded of how important not only the elections were to Baltimore City, as it relates to the state of Maryland, but also like the current moves that Mayor Pugh is making with, you know, making moves to place a new police captain, or a new police chief, head of BCPD. And just a little bit of background, if you're not from Baltimore or you're not familiar with what's going down here, we are working on our, what, fourth police chief. Since January, Pugh let go one police chief, then she had a second pick, her pick come on in, and he had to be let go, or he let himself go, I guess, because, you know, he couldn't pay his taxes or had issues with his taxes. Anyhow, so now we're on this next one, and a guy's name is Joel Fitzgerald. He's current police chief of Fort Worth Police Department, from Philly, served in Philly. Dude is still the current police chief, and how this story shook out, you know, she announced it before Thanksgiving. I think she announced it. She announced that on that Monday of Thanksgiving, or was it the week before? It was the week prior. It was the week prior, like on a Thursday. Anyhow, so she announces that, yep, this is going to be my pick. And the way it works is the mayor has a pick, kind of like, you know, the president. I won't even pull in the president. The mayor has a pick, and the city council has to approve this pick. So they go through a process of vetting the person, you know, check his resume, check the receipts to make sure that this person, what this person is saying, is up to snuff, and that this is a good candidate. Now, usually the mayor and the police are the city council. Ooh, excuse me. The city council work closely together. And, you know, it's not this big old thing, but because there's so much politics surrounding the pick for mayor, or the pick for police chief, and because the stakes are so high, it's like everybody's examining everything with a fine-tooth comb, and so everybody's acting paranoid. So, you know, Mayor Pugh is kind of doing things under the cover of some darkness, which seems shady. And then, you know, the news media and just, you know, council persons, they're analyzing everything. And, you know, at the end of the day, we need somebody in that top spot to be able to fix a bunch of things that are happening right now and change the culture around here, change the policing culture around the city. But it's just coming in so wrong. First off, again, he's still currently the police chief of Fort Worth, which wouldn't be a big deal. It's best to leave a job for a new job instead of just leaving the job and not have anything. But the mayor of Fort Worth made it seem like when he heard it in the news, that was the first that he was hearing that his police chief was trying to leave. So that's shady. Then you've got council persons, you know, requesting his resume, and he's acting like he's not going to give it to him, which, again, shady. It just seems shady. Even if it's not shady, it's just the appearance of this thing is shady. You know, and again, it's a bunch of push and pull. It's a bunch of I don't trust you and you don't trust me. So we just gonna not sit around looking at each other, not trusting each other. And it's a lot of pomp and circumstance, and it's a little weird. Then you add on top of it that the dude is not starting until the first of the year. So I'm like, okay, so what was the point of all of this? If you sprung this choice on everyone out of the blue, and you're not going to have this man start, or maybe he said he's not going to start until January, and it's November now, why didn't you just keep this under your hat and allow your council people, you know, maybe the exec team of the council board, to at least do some preliminary checks on this guy so he can bring it back to his council, to the council, to the city council? Like, do things differently. You know, I always have to act shady. Because right now, okay, so let's say that this guy is everything that Baltimore City needs. And the jury's still out on that, because Fort Worth isn't like Baltimore, but like, the jury's still out. But anyway, let's say that this guy is everything that Baltimore City needs. You're springing him in weird. Like, you're doing this all wrong. Like, when you want him to come in on a clean slate, when you want them, your pick, to come in with a clean slate, that's not going to happen right now, because you got all these city council people that want to go through everything with a fine-tooth comb, and they have that right to do so. But you just set it up kind of shady. And so I'm just like, okay, so we've gone a year full of turmoil in the top spot for the police chief. What is 2019 going to be like? Is this going to be better for us? I hope so. Crime rate is ridiculous. Crime rate is ridiculous. And mind you, it's ridiculous in only certain spots of the city, which is painful. Because we know why that is. We know why that is. Poor economic opportunity and all of that. Just fill in the blank. And so I think we're focusing on the wrong things. I think we're spending energy on the wrong things. We need to pull the right person in the right way to do the job that he's doing in the city. So, I don't know. Stay tuned. We'll see how this thing shakes out. But it's not starting out great. Again, I listen to and read a lot of books when I can. Sometimes I have more time than others, but I've always been a bookworm. And so, you know, I've said before that audiobooks, listening to books online or listening to books through Audible, helps me to keep up, you know, feed my appetite for reading in a way, while still being able to do other things too. And I know that doesn't work for everybody. My bestie Mon, she just can't get into can't get into Audible. She loves to read her books. I have a coworker who enjoys reading her books more than she loves hearing them. But, you know, I'm cool either way. So, you know, I've been reading, you know, a lot of books, reading and listening to a lot of books these days. And I am ashamed to admit, I have read a few Black Woman, White Man books, BWWM as they call them. I read London Bound. No, London Bound was the main thing. London calling or some junk like that. Anyway, the that companion to a previous book that I read about the Chase brothers, the Chase brothers saga. Anyway, it was an all right story, but nevertheless, it was still, you know, kind of weird. Nevertheless, I read it. Then I read The Proposal, which is a bestseller. Roxane Gay said to read it, so I did. That was good. It wasn't as great as The Wedding Date, but which was written by the same writer, but I think Jasmine something. Anyway, but The Proposal is it's good. It's a good book. It's well written. It's well written. The story isn't as fascinating as the Chase Brothers saga, but the Chase Brothers saga isn't as well written as The Proposal or you know, The Wedding Date. So anyway, and then one final BWWM book that I read was The Billionaire's Contract, which it sounds exactly what you think it is. This brown girl goes to, you know, she's young and she needs a job, and she's becomes a babysitter for this rich billionaire who's beautiful, makes so much money, and, you know, at first their relationship is purely sexual, and then it turns into more. And look, again, I'm not knocking anybody who wants to read that. It's just every time when I think I'm going to get something out of it, I read it and I'm just like, girl, I could have read something else. So I think I'm going to stop torturing myself and just move on. But I said that before, so we'll see. Maybe I'll just allow myself to have one guilty pleasure a month. Anyhow, moving on to a new book that I want to read. And then I'm going to give you some recommendations of books that I've read or I own currently. There is a book that's coming out, and I'm very excited to read it. And it's an Afrofuturistic novel, and it's called How Long Till Black Future Month. And it's by M.K. Jemisin. Now, I have not read any of her books, but something about this title just grabbed me. And it makes it seem like it's a collection of stories, so I'm not always hugely big into that. Nevertheless, I think I'll give it a try. I don't know. That just grabbed me. And I enjoy reading books written by Black people about Black people. And then if you can have the nerve to mix my love for sci-fi in there too, oh, I'm in love with it. I'm in love with it. So I'm anxious to get that. I think I'll do that on Audible too. I'll just pull that down from Audible. Anyway, so yeah, I'm anxious for that book. Now, two books that I'm going to revisit while I'm waiting for N.K. Jemisin's book to drop is two Baltimore-based books, actually. These are some of the first books I ever read. One of them was, I think I got it through Amazon Books before, you know, the creation of Audible. And then the other one I actually bought as a physical copy. And so the first one that was the Audible or the Amazon Books before Audible was a thing was So Say the Waiters series, and I think there are like 9 books in the series, and I think you could request physical copies. I can't call it, I'm not sure, but anyway, you could definitely still get it on Amazon. Of course you can get it on Audible.
Oh excuse me,
I had to yawn. Anyway, but yeah, So Say the Waiters, in a nutshell, without giving away the story, it's Baltimore based. So if you're familiar with Baltimore, a lot of the scenes that and streets and areas that are described in this book will be familiar to you. And if you don't know a thing about Baltimore, it'll give you a good insight of the lay of the city. And anyway, it is a little unorthodox. The premise of it is, it's like a criminal act that has been legitimized for the purpose of giving enjoyment to everybody who's involved in it. And it's got a lot of twists and turns, and it's just interesting. So I do recommend that. Like I said, the writer is Baltimore based. The book itself or the series itself is based in Baltimore. It's just good. It's good. And then the last book that I want to bring up as a recommendation is Baltimore Noir. And I recognize that Baltimore Noir it's kind of need to, you got to have a taste for it, basically. Noir books, it's not for everyone. So, you know, if it's not your thing, you're probably not going to like this. But I do enjoy stories set in Baltimore. I just do. I live here. I love this city. I've said that 1,000 times. I love the city. Yes, I'm a transplant, but I feel like the city is part of me. And I like hearing, this isn't sci-fi, but I just like hearing good stories told. And I like, actually, it just fulfills my love for crime, too. Basically, crime thrillers. So there are a lot of short stories in here that, you know, something salacious has happened and, you know, there's a cover up, or, you know, there's some get back, somebody getting their paybacks, you're going to get yours. And so I think it's primarily set in Baltimore, but then there are also some spaces for the purpose of the story where you go outside of the city and you'll learn more about that. And there's a good reason for going outside of the city in some of these. And it's a good book. It's kind of trashy in places, but it's good. It's good all the same. So yeah, those are the two books that I recommend. If you want to read, like me, Afrofuturistic books and keep going down that path, then definitely How Long Till Black Future Month by N.K. Jameson is going to be great. And actually, it'd be pretty cool if we could talk about that. You know, chat back and forth about it. But anyway, definitely read So Say the Waiters in Baltimore Noir if you can. All right. So yeah, it's just a lot running through my mind these days. You know, I'll focus on a single topic next episode, but you know, the whole crime in the music industry, I'm fiending for something, some more information about that. And so any recommendations for shows or, you know, TV shows, podcasts or otherwise, I want to hear them. You know, I'm still going to be following this saga with, you know, the police chief whenever we get one, for Baltimore City. And then, you know, what's going on with Mayor Pugh? Will she run for re-election? I don't know. All of that stuff. Just checking in with Baltimore City politics. And then, you know, I'm always going to be reading. So I definitely will come back to you after I get How Long Till Black Future Month. And I read through that and get take on that and kind of talk through that and just build up another list of Afrofuturistic books. You know, kind of whet my appetite. So yeah, like I said, just wanted to talk about a few different things. But yeah, that's it for now. Please be sure to send me a message via anchor.fm, especially about any of the book recommendations, if you've read them already, or, you know, if you have some book recommendations that you think ought to, you know, that I ought to add to the library. Feel free also to donate, to the show. 99 cents would be a helpful contribution, but then anything would be helpful. Please also consider leaving a favorable rating for the show on CastBox, Anchor.fm, of course, Breaker, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this show. All right. I appreciate you. Seriously, I do. Thanks for listening. Until next time.